Before we get started, I want to wish you Happy Bison Day.
Oh, well, Happy Bison Day to you, too.
So I'm not sure if we're supposed to take a bison to lunch, or are we supposed to have bison for lunch? I'm not sure how this works.
Well, I guess it depends on who you're talking to.
Very good. So this week, we're going to be talking about working in Liberty.
Yes, Liberty training is quite popular these days, and like everything else, I think it stems from, you know, what people do to have fun with their equines and everything. But I can't help but think about how this all started back in the 70s and 80s when I began training and everything, and we thought we did a really good job of gentle breaking animals and using all kinds of different ways to do that. And it even goes so far as the invention of feeding programs and everything. And I think that Liberty training needs to be thought about in terms of safety and also in terms of what's healthy for you and your animal. And rather than, you know, training was always all about how to make the horse submissive to us or the mule submissive to us. But these days we have enough knowledge to be able to look at it differently. And this is what I've done. I heard, for instance, way back when that mules live and a lot longer than horses. And I'm sure you've heard this too. And they can live till they're 40, 50 years old. But back in the 70s and 80s, the veterinarians were giving equines an average of 15 to 20 years to live.
Oh.
And that's what the average was. And I had to think about it myself back then because I was losing a lot of animals by taking other people's advice. Now, granted, we have moved that average up with the things that we've learned over the years. And now the veterinarians are saying that the average lifespan of an equine is 20 to 25 years. And in reference to mules and donkeys, yes, they are. What I have found is, yes, they are stronger, tougher animals and can live a lot longer, although the average number are keeping within keeping of the average horse 20 to 25 years. I kind of thought with the ability to live 40 to 50 years, why aren't we hitting that? And I asked myself that question a long, long time ago, and I started researching with the 32 animals that I had here on the ranch, and I found that feed was a big thing. When my animals were most healthy is when they were eating oats and grass hay. And I tried other things. I tried all these new feeds, these new supplements, Equine Senior, all that stuff. And found that it wasn't really very good. And one of the things that I noticed was really bad was all of a sudden, you know, they're making it very convenient for you to feed by offering dehydrated feeds and pellets. And I thought, well, this just doesn't seem right to me. And so I worked with my veterinarian and stayed away from him. Of course, the Equine Senior was pellets.
Sure.
And it wasn't really helping. I had a mini mule that I bought when he was 20 years old, and the people had retired him, and he started getting kind of skinny and everything, so we put him on the Equine Senior. That didn't seem to be doing him any good at all, so I just went ahead and decided to mash up his food in the blender. Because he, by that time, had minimal teeth in his mouth. He was going on 35. And so I thought, well, okay, if I've got to put more weight on him, rather than going to these pellets and all this stuff that these people are telling me, and, you know, in ads and everything, I'm going to try to do what I would do. And so I mashed up his food. Well, long story short, that mini mule lived to be 41 years old, but
wow.
He was on grass hay and oats.
Okay.
And the Show Glow supplement for vitamins, it's like the 1-a-day vitamins for people. It doesn't offset your chemical balance or anything. It just gives you what you need on a daily basis, because that just simply is not provided in our world. And I learned even more about it when I was producing hay and how you got to replenish the ground and all of that, and how to do it without having to switch crops and all of that stuff. But anyway, we'll put this feeding thing aside for a moment. The thing is, if you're going to be working with your animal and you want to do liberty training, you have to be able to get along. And you can't get along if one of you isn't feeling good. And that's where the feed comes in. Now, the other thing is a lot of people, they have a thing against restraints. When I first started training, I found draw reins with mules to be most helpful, because mules are very strong and very strong-minded. And when they don't want to do anything, the thing they do is they raise their head and bolt and go right through the bridle or right through the halter.
Right.
And that's one of the things that they all do. That's their evasive behavior, their primary evasive behavior. So I found draw reins really helpful, and then I was told by trainers that I couldn't really write articles about how to use draw reins for people because they wouldn't know how to use them and they would abuse them and hurt their animals. I think in the background they were thinking, you're going to take our clients away from them from us. If you teach them how to use all these training techniques that we're using.
That's right.
And I told them, I said, well, I think that there's enough information for everybody to have it and to learn how to use it. But I do kind of agree with you, because draw reins are in the hands of the rider, you have to be a good rider to be able to use them effectively without abusing your animal's mouth, because you can be tightening those things up and you can cause them to get bloody, as they did when they were using twisted wire snaffle bits to get leverage.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But, of course, they don't talk about that. They'd rather talk about the draw reins, abusiveness of those. When actually our whole approach, I thought, was a bit abusive. And I'll be the first one to raise my hand. I was using those methods because those methods were working. But they were not fair to the animal. And so I wanted to find a way that was fair to the animal. And that's when Richard Schrake and I developed the elbow pull. He calls it the rhythm collector, and he has it done quite differently than I do. He uses a leather rigging with rings on it so that you can set it at a different place. I set up mine with a 3/8-inch twisted nylon rope with small snaps on each end. And what this thing does, you put it on them, you put it over the pole, through the bit rings, through the front legs, and attach it onto the saddle or the surcingle that you're using. With a mule or donkey, you can use a hard tie, but with a horse, you cannot. You want that elbow pull. It has to be measured and made for each individual animal, so you can't just make them and sell them. You have to measure your animal for it, and I have a video that shows you how to do that in Equus Revisited, and you make your own for each animal. Now, granted, you can probably use the same one for your minis, for your saddle mules, for your draft animals, if you leave about a foot extra on it when you make it. Then, with the horses, you need that foot extra there because you're not going to hard tie it to the saddle or to the surcingle. You're going to loop it over their back and then loop it like you're tying a knot, only you loop it a couple of times. Not so much that it won't slip, because you want it to slip. And then you go ahead and fasten those snaps onto something, leaving slack in it. So if your horse raises his head and comes up against it, it's not going to hard tie, because what he will do is flip himself over backwards. That's what horses do. And even some mules will do that.
Right.
So you want it to slip, and it has to be introduced in the round pen, so that they will get used to being submissive. That's their first lesson in boundaries that you're laying out for your animal. This is in basic training. They need to know there are boundaries to their behaviors. Now, if you're doing liberty training and you're starting training that way, you cannot establish boundaries with liberty. They won't learn that. They will have behaviors that will work their way in. If you're trying to lunge them, for instance, out in the open and have them come to you and everything like that, I've seen horses kick at people, break their arms, attack them because they don't want to do what's being done, you know, and they have too much freedom of aggressive behaviors when they're not taught the basics. And this is why, you know, and the other thing is they will not learn how to go in a good posture, moving their body symmetrically through so that all of the elements that support the skeletal frame are being developed symmetrically and enabling smooth, forward, symmetrical movement that is comfortable for the equine. They only do that kicking and twisting of their bodies and everything when something gets out of alignment. That's what I have discovered. And when they're comfortable and they're taught how to go in good posture, then they don't have any reason to buck, twist, kick, or attack you. So they don't do it. They just flat don't do it. At first, they don't like the submissiveness that the elbow pull demands, but even that is really very, very unabusive. People look at it and they think it's like draw reins. No, it's not. It only, when you adjust it, like I said, over the pole, down to the bit rings, through the front legs and secured on the back, what you do when you adjust it is you first rock their head so they're loose at the pole, and then you attach it on one side and you push their muzzle up just to the point where they're going to start to invert their head and put their nose up and put a U in their neck. That's what you want to prevent. So you raise their head up just to the point where they are just about to start to do that, and that's where you tie it off.
There you go.
But it lets them raise their head above their withers. It lets them arc their back. It allows them to step well underneath with the hindquarters. They can put their head all the way down to the ground, and they can put it all the way from side to side, 180 degrees and sometimes more. So they have full range of motion. They're not restricted in their motion by this restraint. It's a restraint, but it's also a postural aid, is what I like to call it. Because of the action of this postural aid, it actually encourages them to round their backs, to step well underneath, and to go ahead and go forward with a nice, loose, elastic, flexible body, and creates agility in good posture, because they can't get into a posture that's going to contort their body. And so it kind of frustrates them in the first couple lessons, but after a while they learn what it is, and usually they learn it in an instant. 15 minutes is what it usually takes for them to go, oh, it's not going to let me put my head up and grab the bit and run. It's not going to let me get all contorted and buck and kick and everything, because actually it feels pretty comfortable going like this, you know? And so they take to it very quickly, and then you just use that postural aid in everything that you're doing. And in this case, I like to do things in a logical and sequential order. So they have certain basic lessons that they need to learn to be attentive to you, to be obedient to you, and to enjoy what they're doing while they're doing that, so that it doesn't feel like you're forcing them in any way, shape, or form.
Right. Wow.
So you start by going ahead and putting them in this rigging and put a halter over the bridle so you don't have the lead rope on the bit. And you start by walking them in my hourglass pattern. And in that pattern, there are four places where you stop. You set them up for a square. The other thing is that when you first start doing this, you will go, if you're drawing it in the sand, it's an hourglass. You have four cones in the corners of the arena, two cones in the middle closer together, and you're going to walk through those. And in between those cones is where you're going to stop. And when you stop, people have trouble without the elbow pull because the animal doesn't want to stop. They want to walk around you. If you have the fanny pack full of oats around you, then they want to push into that and get aggressive about getting them. So the last thing they do is stand still. But when they're in the elbow pull, there's enough restriction there so that you can actually have a discussion with them and say, okay, if you get your back feet together and then you get your front feet together and you stand still, then I will give you the oats in the fanny pack, and you can stand there and be still, and I won't bother you until you're through chewing. Then, when they get calm. They get calm about it. That busy behavior that you find every time you try to stop an animal on a halter.
Sure.
You know, they all do it. They all move around, and then they end up dragging you around so you can't stand still.
Right.
You know, and it feeds on itself. And so they learn to stand still here. They learn what they can expect from you, and they don't get tense and anxious about what they're going to get. So they're being taught these basics of how to be polite and how to be tolerant and patient and how to wait for you, how to be attentive to what you're going to do. Now, the other thing that does this in this hourglass pattern is it's made up of curves. So you want to make curves and straight lines, and you want to be able to walk in a curve gradually, not abrupt turns around the cones. You go gradually around the cones. You walk the straight lines on the short ends. But when you're doing this, you need to be able to allow the animal to be responsible for his own self-carriage. And when you do that and you don't interrupt his balance, he's going to be happy because then he can enjoy his movement in good posture, which this elbow pull is making him do, that you don't have to fuss with. All you have to do is remember to hold your lead rope in your left hand, let it droop, and go up to his face on your right side to start with, if you're tracking left. You point in the direction of travel, which will show him where his head is supposed to go and what it's supposed to follow, because these are following animals. They need you as a leader this way. And then be polite and say his name to get his attention. And in my case, a lot of it was B, the girl, B, walk on, you know. Sonny was a little harder to do with his reining training in the past, but he caught on to it. He was just a lot slower. And they will learn differently, too. Different animals are going to take a little bit of different times because they're all different individuals. And you can't designate them by breed or anything like that. You've got to take each individual as they are. So you take the name, you say the name, then you give the command to walk on, and you put your hand out and point in the direction of travel. Now, after you stop going around that first cone, then you're headed for the gate cones in the middle, and you're on an arc, but you've had to change sides. Where you were on the left side and pointing with your right hand, now you're on the right side and pointing with your left hand. And you're going to go through those gate cones on a smooth arc and head for the next corner cone. You're going to stop again between those. You're going to do the same thing. You're going to set them up four square. You're going to tell them, whoa, turn to their shoulders, set them up four square, give them the oats, and wait for them to complete their chewing, then change sides again. Now, what you're doing is you are actually addressing the core strength of the elements that surround the bones, and they're being strengthened symmetrically because you're changing sides and you are letting the animal be responsible for his own self-carriage. And there is a pendulum inside the animal that rocks back and forth according to the direction that they're traveling. So as you go through this pattern when you're tracking right, the pendulum swings to the left and back to the right, and back to the left and back to the right. And when you come to the halt, it stops going back and forth and settles in the middle. And all motion stops. And then they're calm. Then they can just stand there for a square and they can chew. Now this is when you're tracking right. Now you're going for a corner con, you're going to be tracking left. So you change sides. And now the pendulum starts the swing to the right, goes back to the left, to the right, to the left. As you're going down around that cone and down the short side and coming back to the middle again, towards the middle cones, then you stop between that corner cone again and the middle cone, and the pendulum swings to the middle and stops. When you foursquare them, they're stopped, they're chewing, they're comfortable. And, you know, they always say that if you get your animal to chew, that means they're calm. Well, what faster way can you get them to chew than to hand them a handful of oats?
Right, right.
You know, I figured that out, too. Yeah. Why sit there and wait with nothing in your hand and pet them on the side of the neck and wait for them to decide whether they like it or not?
Right.
I know they like the oats, and I know that they make them chew.
Sure.
So that seemed like a common sense thing to do, you know, in my book.
Right.
And so we do that. And the reason that it's effective is because it's in an hourglass, too. Because, like I said, there's an internal pendulum. And when you're just working on the rail, for instance, whether you're leading, ground driving, or riding, that pendulum doesn't have an opportunity to swing back and forth the full gamut of the inside of the animal. When you're going along a fence line, there's an optical illusion that takes place that sets the animal and makes them a little tense about what's on one side is a wall and what's on the other side is open. So the pendulum, if you're tracking left and the wall's on the right, the pendulum is going to swing left, 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 and only go a little bit to the right before it feels like it's hitting that wall. And it doesn't matter, you know, people will tell you, oh, well, I work my animal both directions. Well, if the pendulum's not in free swing, it's not doing any good.
Right.
You see why? Do you understand why?
Sure.
Yeah. So, you know, so you start with this leading training stuff, and they learn a lot of basics in here. They learn how to be calm. They learn how to listen to you. They learn how to wait. They learn how to be patient. They learn how not to be fidgety, which, by the way, creates vices. You will have them in a mild egg butt snaffle bit, because the egg butt snaffle bit will not pinch the corners of their mouth like a ring snaffle will.
Right.
The nice, smooth mouthpiece on the bit is easy for them to rest on their tongue and hold up against the palate. And this is in preparation for the communication that you're going to do through the reins. And we want them light in the bridle, so they need to learn how to hold that bit and not be fidgety about it when you put bridle on and ride with it. You know, they will learn how to do that. And in these exercises with the elbow pull, working the bit for you, you know, and they have control over it. In the beginning, before they get really used to their good posture, they're going to be up against that elbow pull, and you'll see it's kind of tight going from the bit to their front legs. And as they get stronger in the posture, you'll notice that gets looser from the bit to the front legs. And they're able to hold the posture more easily on their own.
Sure.
They don't have, but when they don't have the strength, that elbow pull, you'll see it's kind of tight on their pole.
Right.
But it gives them something to lean against, like a ballet dancer uses a bar on the wall.
Mm.
They use the elbow pull on the top of their head to lean against to hold their balance until they're able to hold it themselves.
Okay, right.
And as they improve, you know, as they work through this pattern, and the other nice thing about this, too, is these exercises only need to be done once a week, and you only need to go ahead and complete the pattern one way, cross the diagonal, and go the other way, and that's the end of the lesson. And it only takes 15, 20 minutes to do once a week.
Oh,
so if
really?
You say you Yeah, you say you don't have time for it. Well, that's BS.
Yeah,
you do.
Yeah.
So you
how
do.
Many how many of these do you do before you actually introduce them to the Liberty training?
Well, it's not how many of these do you do. You're going to do 2 years of core strength training, 6 months through the hourglass pattern at the walk, and stopping and halting just like I described to you. Then at the end of that, when after you've been able, this is also the beginning of Liberty training, because you're going to know when their core strength is adequate, when that elbow pull remains loose the whole lesson. Then what you do is you throw your lead rope over the top of their neck, get in your walking position, say their name, go walk on, put your hand up, point in the direction of travel, but now you're not holding on to the lead rope. This is Liberty at the beginning.
Oh, wow.
At the very, very beginning. You've taught them all the elements of the pattern. You've taught them how that makes them feel good. You taught everything feels good in this whole thing. Now you're going to let them be 100% responsible for doing the entire lesson on their own, just walking with you. That's number one on Liberty. You do the same thing when you add the obstacles for the next 6 months. Because the next 6 months, the first order of business is getting them to go through the obstacles and everything and not be afraid of them. Because a lot of animals are, they see a bridge and they go backwards.
Right.
And so what you want to do is, the elbow pull again will make it harder for them to do those movements that they do when they raise their head and bolt. So you've got a hold of the halter. When they start backing up from something like the bridge, then you just hold your position. You do not, you know, try to tug on them.
Right.
You let them go backwards. You let them hit the end of the rope. You keep giving them the slack until you get to the end.
Mm-hmm.
Let them get as far away as they feel comfortable. And you're not at the bridge yet. You're only halfway there. and then you go, come on. We're going to walk over this. Oh, no, I'm not going to walk over that. I can't do it. It's really scary. And you just hold the tension. You hold the tension in the lead rope, but you don't pull. You just hold it like they're tied to a solid post. You are a post. You are not going to move. You're not going to move towards the bridge. You're not going to move back towards them. You're going to hold your position. This is what we just learned in the hourglass.
Mm.
You hold your position in between the cones.
Okay.
It's not teaching them anything different than they've already learned. And so then you go, well, you know, you got to come. So you kind of jiggle the rope a little bit and you go, come on, let's go. Oh, no, that's way too scary. And then you say to them, you look them in the face, and you go, yeah, but you forgot something. And they'll go, what? I forgot something? And what? You got the rope in one hand, and I usually hold the rope in the left hand because I'm right-handed, and I go, yeah, you forgot that I've got the fanny pack. And I unzip it, and I reach into it, and I take the oats out, and I dabble them right back into the fanny pack again. And I say, you can't have these till you come over here.
Wow.
And you wait. And believe me, they will come to you because you're still standing only halfway to the bridge. So they will come to you, and then you feed them the oats, and you tell them how great they are, and you again square up, ask them to square up, stand still, relax, and chew their oats. It's a repetition of what you've done leading in the hourglass pattern without the obstacles. And this is how you do, is you repeat the same things consistently so that it clicks in their head, oh, I've done this before. This is not bad.
Right.
And then you turn around, you say their name, you say, walk on, and you start walking towards the bridge, and then, whoop, all of a sudden their heads disappeared behind you, the rope got tied around your waist, and you go, oh, so we're stopping again, huh? And you repeat the same thing. You go, oh, but you forgot one thing. You keep your rope tied. You forgot this again. And they go at you, and they, what? I got the fanny pack. And you unzip it, and you show it to them again, and they will come forward because now their attention is on the fanny pack. It's not on the bridge.
Right, yeah.
And they weren't really afraid of the bridge to start with, because if they were by themselves, they would be investigating it. They're damn curious that would. As long as you're not there telling them to do it,
right,
they would do it. So now we get to the bridge, and you go, okay, and you act like the bridge is nothing, and you start to walk up on it, and they go, uh-uh, and you just turn around and go, jiggle the fanny pack and go, and you just walk across it. Now, what they're probably going to do is step up on that bridge with you, but they're going to pass you while you're on the bridge.
Oh, sure.
They're going to go very fast and get to the other side.
Mm-hmm.
And that's okay. You just follow them. Try not to let them get too far out on the lead rope. And then you go, and whoa. And then set them up again. Do the same thing. See how you're teaching them things they already know, but you're just reminding them and sticking one task in the middle of it.
Oh,
hey,
yeah,
here's a bridge.
Okay.
You know, here's some poles, here's this, here's that, you know. And once you've got them so that they're going through all this stuff, you know, then you can start breaking it down and prepping for the Liberty training. And what you do for the bridge, now they're not afraid of it. So you walk up to it, and you stop right in front of the bridge, and you square up, and you let them have their oaths, and you sit there and wait for them to finish chewing. Then you step up onto the bridge and ask them to put the two front feet on the bridge, leave the two back feet down, square them up, give them their oats, wait till they're chewing, finish chewing, then tell them to walk on up onto the bridge and go 4 feet on the bridge, stop, square up, reward, wait. Now, this next move is when the halter becomes extremely important. It's important anyway, but you want to be using a nylon webbed halter. And the reason for this is you do not want any distractions from their attention on you. And these rope halters, they supposedly give you leverage, but the main leverage you should have is this mental leverage you're conjuring up, and not any distractions from that. And these rope halters, number one, they don't fit snug on their face. A web halter can be fitted to their face so that all parts of the halter are touching their face, but it's comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
These rope halters have knots in them. Now, I want you to do something for me. I want you to take your index finger and put it right below your ear and just sit it there. How long do you think you could sit there with your finger sitting there before it would start to bother you?
Not very long.
Right? Now, take the palm of your hand and wrap your thumb and your palm around your ear and let your palm rest under your ear. How's that feel?
Better.
Lots better, huh?
You bet.
Almost like a caress or a hug. Right?
Yes. Well, this is good stuff.
Yeah. So this is how the halter makes a difference. And at the end of the bridge is when it's going to become very important, because you don't want anything that's going to poke him, take his attention off of you, and ruin the whole thing that you've built. You're going to step off that bridge, and chances are, because his core strength is not strong enough yet to put those two front feet down and leave the two back feet on the bridge, what generally happens is he will put the two front feet down, and just like he did when he first walked over the bridge, he's going to walk right through it, go right past you, and not stop until his back feet are on the ground. At which point, you go ahead and set him up again. Don't get upset. Just set him up again. Do the whole routine. And then take him around again and do it again. But now we know when he hits the end of the bridge, he's going to pass you. He's going to take the lead rope, and he's going to pass you. So we don't let him do this. And this is one time when you're going to grab that lead rope at the end of the bridge. When you hit the end of the bridge, you grab it right underneath his chin. Give him a little tug back. Like, no, take this slow. And because he's learned to be compliant, you know, to your cues, he's going to go, oh, well, I don't want to run. She doesn't want me to run through this anymore. But my centrifugal force is still going forward. So I will just take the hindquarters and step sideways off the bridge and turn around and face her after I get my feet on the ground, my front feet on the ground. And that's what they will do.
Right.
You'll get the front feet on the ground, but the back feet will do a turn on the forehand, and you'll be looking at his face.
Oh,
and you go, okay, we don't have much core strength now, do we? Okay, we're going to turn around here like we did do it right when we came off the bridge. We're going to stop. We're going to square up. We're going to eat our oats like we do. And then we're going to try this again. Now we know that he's got really poor core strength. So when you hit the edge of the bridge, now you're not going to ask him to put his front feet down first. You're going to step off that bridge and get right in front of him.
Oh.
And because he's learned good manners, he's not going to run over the top of you.
Mm-hmm.
And you go ahead and put your lead rope in your left hand and grab the right side of his noseband with the left hand. Grab the left side of the noseband with your right hand, because you're going to help him balance while he's putting those front feet down. So you jiggle the left side a little bit with your right hand. You go, okay, give me that left leg. Let's put it down. And he's going to put it down, but he's going to be very shaky about it. Then you're going to jiggle the left side to put the right foot down, and he's going to be very shaky. But you're going to hold that nose bend to help him to balance, and you're going to have a pretty good grip on both sides. And you're going to talk to him. You got to talk to him. You can't just do this without talking. They need that reinforcement, that verbal, soothing voice of yours saying, it's okay, yeah. This is what I want. Yes, you're doing really well. This is good. And as they stand there and shake, you will notice that the shaking becomes a little less aggressive. And when it feels like it, let go of the right with your right hand, reach in the fanny pack, get the oats, give them to him, then put your hand back up there to help him balance, and let him chew his oats. He has learned that when he's chewing oats, he stands still, and nobody's going to ask him to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no anxiety attached to this whatsoever. And you will notice that his balance, as he relaxes, is going to get better. And as he relaxes, you relax the grip on the halter. Take your grip where it's not tight anymore. Just slowly let it out. And then when he finishes chewing, before he has a chance to get anxious again, just turn around, go, what's his name? Walk on, walk off the end of the bridge, stop, square up, reward. And my golly, you've done the bridge, and he's learned how to let you help him.
Wow.
And that's how you do the bridge over and over and over again, or any other obstacle that's tricky like that.
Sure.
Tires can be very tricky like that too.
Yeah.
And you want to learn, you know, you get them through them, but then you got to teach them how to stop in the middle of it. And you will be doing this on the lead rope. You'll be doing it ground driving, and you will be doing it under saddle. And the first thing that taught me how well they listen was when I took Maybe CT through the six tires, and it was funny. It made me laugh. I was ground driving her, and I stopped her in the middle of the tires, and she stopped with her back foot in the air, like she was taking a step, and she wouldn't put it down until I told her to move on.
Now that's precision.
That really is, but that's also 100% attentiveness to your commands.
Oh, yes.
And they do it with the tractor tire, too. When you're taking them through there, and they will do it on the lead rope. They will do it on the drive lines. They will do it under saddle. I didn't even realize they were doing it under saddle until I saw a video of when I stopped. I had done the turn on the forehand in the tractor tire, and then I walked the mule. I walked the out of that and left the hindquarters in, but I stopped her before the second foot got a chance to come in and set down, and I stopped her there. She just held that foot up
until
I said, oh, we need to take another step, and I let her put it down, and then I stopped her again. And this is how I say, people, you will learn how to appreciate the little victories that you're having going this slow through all this groundwork and paying attention to all these little details. And then, again, with the lead rope, you know, when you feel like they're following your verbal commands, your body language and everything, you can throw that lead rope up over their neck and do all the obstacle things with the lead rope on the neck. That's liberty obstacles. They're doing it themselves. You're just standing next to them.
No, that's fascinating. That is really,
isn't cool. It?
Oh my gosh!
And then, you know, you're gonna go to the round pen, but now you've got their body so well balanced that they're not gonna lean on the circle. They're gonna keep that equal weight over all 4 feet. They will be able to stop square when you say whoa, because now they know what stopping square means. When they get to the round pen, you very seldom see them with their feet splayed like you did when you were leading. They will actually slide into their stops. You're beginning the sliding stop, and you're already doing liberty on the circle because now you're in the middle and you're not holding on to them. And so I also like to do lunge line training when I do that in the round pen, too, after they've learned walk, trot, canter back, reverse, and all of those things. I like to put the lunge line on, and you can't do a reverse with the lunge line on it, but I like to teach them a cue so that when I get them out in the open arena, they don't grab that lunge line and run. Because, you know, the elbow pull will stop it to a point, but if they can still pull sideways with that.
Right.
And if you get in the open and they don't have a cue that keeps them on the circle, they can run off. And so my donkeys have taught me this. Not so much the mules, but the donkeys.
Those little devils.
Yeah, so I go ahead and I tie the lunge line with about 4 inches of slack to the snap on the side that I'm going to be standing on, and then loop it under their chin and snap it on the bit on the other side, because I don't want to pull the bit through their mouth, but I want to attach the lunge line to the bit. Don't want to mess with the halter anymore. So I do that, and then I put them on the rail, and I let the lunge line drag on the ground between me and them. And it's really fun in the fall because you got dry leaves on the ground and they crackle.
Mm.
So they create noise and things that might spook them. You know? So you just let them spook and you let it make the noise, and then pretty soon they figure out what it is and it's no big deal. And there's no pulling on their head.
Yeah.
So they're fine. And you hold that lunge line very loose in your hand, and then, you know, just let it rest on your little finger. Mostly that's where the pressure is going to be. And that's where you want it when you're riding. You want that little finger pressure so they respond, lighten the bridle on your little finger. So then you watch them as they're going around. And when the outside front leg comes into suspension, you close your fist. And when it hits the ground, you open it. And what you're doing is you're allowing that left or that outside front leg to come into suspension and you're telling them, stay on the circle by closing your hand, and they are, if you watch them carefully, moving that leg across closer to the inside leg to stay on the circle. And that is your cue when you're in the open. You wow. lunge them with your hands feeling loose, but when you first get out there and you want to teach them the cue again, as a reminder, you get them going around you on a short line first so you can control them, but you still, when that outside front leg comes up, you squeeze your hand closed. When it comes to the ground, you open it up. And then as they respond to that easily, you can let out the line a little bit, do it the same way, at a little bit more distance, give them a little bit more freedom until you've got them all the way out to 25 feet on the lunge line. And the lunge line is still hanging loose, even though it's not dragging on the ground anymore. It's still loose, and you're still just closing your hand when that outside front leg comes up in the air, and they know that means cross my leg over, stay on the circle, and they won't run off.
Wow, this is really fascinating.
Wait until you actually do it. It's amazing to watch how quickly they learn when you are consistent with everything that you're doing. And once they're really good in the round pen, we'll go back there. Once you've got them going really good in the round pen, and again, you've got them walk, trot, canter on your body language and voice commands at all, only, then you can put the drive lines on them. And by teaching them this lunge line training, you've already had one line on them, so you just put the second line on the outside. Now you can incorporate a reverse, you know, because they won't get tangled up in the line if they reverse, because now you got two lines going to the bit. And you go ahead and you teach them walk, trot, canter, and you put your rein cues to them. You know, when you stop, you put squeeze, release on both reins evenly. Ask them to whoa, squeeze it, and release it. And they should always be on a loose rein when they're stopping. They should never be stopping on a tight rein. Mm. That's only the cue. And then they will know that the pressure is off the minute they stop. Oh. And they will respond to that. Mm-hmm. And so you teach them walk, trot, canter, whoa, and then you can teach them to back like that. You can do S turns through the middle of the round pen and everything. And then once they've learned all that in the round pen, then you take them back out to the arena and you take them through the hourglass pattern. And when you're in the hourglass pattern, you go through it just like you did when you're leading. And by the way, when you're in the round pen, you got to practice this too. Now you're not going to walk with the front legs in sync. You're going to walk with the back legs in sync. This is one thing I forgot to tell you. You need to look down at the front legs when you're leading and keep in step with them. If they start with their right leg, so do you. Mm-hmm. And you match their steps. And when you introduce the ground driving, now you're not going to match steps with the front legs. You're going to match steps with the back legs. And what this does is this allows you, if they lead off with the right back leg, the front leg is going to follow. And what you're going to do is you're going to walk forward with that right front leg, but your right hand is going to follow. So that means going forward, you're not going to stop them with pressure on the rein. You're going to follow their motion and keep that rein loose while they're moving forward. And the only indication that they're going to get with pressure is when you ask to whoa. You're going to go and whoa. You're going to stop with your feet together, close your hands, and open them immediately. If they don't stop, then you follow them, do it again until they do. So that the only pressure that they're feeling is the pressure from squeeze with an immediate release. Because when they're being ridden, what you want to do when you say whoa is squeeze and then release and drop the reins. And they should always stand still when the reins are dropped. Always. For mounting, for stopping and going and checking the gate or whatever you want to do. If you have to get off, they will learn how to ground tie.
Yes. Yes.
All this stuff sets them up by giving them these basics. And what you do when you hit the hourglass pattern, you'll go around and you'll hit those places between the cones. And, of course, they deserve their reward. So you go, and whoa, you walk up behind them, you put the lines on their butt, you walk to the front, and you give them their reward, and you wait. And they will learn to wait until they're finished chewing. Then you walk back behind them, grabbing your lines as you go behind again. They are still standing still, and they will not walk on until you give the command to do so. That's liberty training in the ground driving stage.
That is awesome, because this creates a quieter animal.
All the way around.
Yeah.
All the way around.
Right. Very.
And I did some liberty training with three animals here just a couple weeks ago. And they always have something to teach me. Always.
Well, you know.
Now Sir Lancelot is my star. He's the one that's gone through the whole course. He doesn't do anything wrong ever.
Really?
Not ever. Not on the lead rope, not on the drive lines, not under saddle. He's perfect example. So I took him through in his halter and holding on the lead rope, and he's going, oh, what are you doing that for? You don't have to do that. You know, so I said, okay, Lance, just unhooked the lead rope altogether and took him through the whole thing. And he does turns on the forehand and the tire on all those positions, lead rope, drive lines, under saddle, all of it, you know. And then his second in line, April, little thoroughbred mule, is very, very busy, and she has a hard time standing still, but she tries really hard. But what I noticed is that when we square up at the beginning of the workout, always has to get her legs unsquare before they get square. You know, she takes too big a step backwards, and then I gotta line up the other one, and then that one goes backwards too far.
Yeah.
And then when I get those together, then the front legs, one goes back, one doesn't, you know, and try to get it forward, then it goes too far forward. So I gotta kind of fidget with her, but she is quite obedient, you know, and really wants to do it, but she's just so busy that sometimes she has a problem. And well, I just mess with it until we get it. I don't move out of my position, you know, okay, until she's four square and chewing her oats and standing still. Okay. If we get stuck in the pattern for 10 minutes there just with one square up, then so be it. Then I took Angel, who has had even less training. She's gone through it, but she's had less. And she's just not polite. She's kind of a bully. So when we went to go across over the bridge, she thought she should go down the center of it and bump me off the side.
Ooh. Okay.
No, she just breathes.
Oh.
She's like, you can walk beside me, but I'm going to breathe, and I'm going to get really big, and I'm going to knock you off balance. And she just, it's not disobedience, but it makes me have to do the obstacle a couple times. And the same thing with the walk through back through L, you know, she's quite good at trying to make me fall out of the L over the rails that are raised that I've got for this thing. And then when I try to get her to back through it, she's good walking forward. But when I ask her to back through it and we get to the joint and she has to swing her hindquarters around, she's like, I'm going to breathe now and my foot's going to move and knock over the rail.
This is really funny.
You know, this is why my last Facebook post was this. When you get to learning mules, the first thing you got to learn is how to have a sense of humor.
You bet.
And not let them rattle you, you know.
And every day is a different day.
Every day is a different day. But, you know, by the time you get through all these basics, and with mine, they've all learned them. You know, so they've been lunged together. I've lunged 12 mules together and everything. And they all are at kind of varying stages of this, and some being more obedient than others.
Wow.
But I've got Lance is perfect, like I said. You can take him anywhere. You can lunge him out in the open, free lunge him. He will not leave you because the fanny pack just doesn't go anywhere but you. And he's very attached to that. And I don't think being food motivated is a bad thing. I think food motivation is a good thing. Mm-hmm. You know, you just have to learn how to dispense those food rewards so that you're not reinforcing bad behaviors.
You bet.
And you do that by being clear and consistent in exactly the same way that you confront them every time you do any kind of movement. Stop is always the same way. It's always turn to their shoulder, set them up, give them their reward, and stand there and wait. And don't you move either. And then be polite when you're ready to go. You turn around, face forward, get into your leading position, say their name, say walk on, look down, and match their steps. And they will get to the point where they will watch you matching their steps, so that now we can do leading through obstacles, stopping, backing. We can get behind them, like when we're ground driving and we back them on the drive lines, take those lines off, stand behind them, say back. They know the verbal command. They know the body language. You're moving backwards. They know they'll get a reward if they do what you're doing. And that's how you get to real good, posturally correct, easy, and comfortable liberty training.
Very well said, Meredith.
Another cool episode. Meredith's website is lucky3ranch.com, and you can call her at 1-800-816-7566. And I can be reached through my website, everycowgirlsdream.com. Don't forget, hit the subscribe button.
Gotta go. My mule is looking for me.
Mule Talk is an Every Cowgirl's Dream production.